if the election was an emotional day for you, election day, consider what it was like for Jay Chance.
My father passed on election day. He didn't pass a day before or a day after. He passed the morning of election day. And so I feel like that was only symbolic that where we're moving as a government and a country is not at all something that's going to instill life into our prison systems. It's going to do just the opposite.
Jay's father, Philip Chance, spent the majority of his life in prison in Alabama. It's home state, of course, to Senator Jeff Sessions, who's likely to be the next attorney general. Today, in partnership with Case in Point, we look at the history of Philip Chance and his life in and after prison. In 1971, Philip Chance was just 15 years old and living in Michigan. While visiting family in Choctaw, Alabama, he went with his older brother and a cousin to the local convenience store. Chance later said that he didn't know that inside his cousin robbed and killed a white convenience store clerk. Now, all three of them were charged with murder. Philip cooperated with the police, and on the advice of his appointed attorney, he pled guilty and was sentenced to life in prison with the chance of parole. The idea there was that if he behaved, he'd have a shot at release. I talked with Philip Chance's oldest daughter, Jade Chance, who we heard from a moment ago, and also with Andrew Cohen, commentary editor for the Marshall Project and author of Case in Point. Philip Chance was known as a model inmate while in prison. He was up for parole 10 years after being sentenced, and that's when things took an unexpected turn.
10 years after he gets the life sentence with the possibility of parole, he's up for parole. And that parole is denied. And so he feels hopeless. He feels like he's never going to get the justice that he deserves or had been promised by his lawyers. And so he takes off. He goes back to Michigan and back home. There, he starts a life. Alabama doesn't go after him right away. He becomes a father. He gets married. He starts working using his skills that he had learned in prison as a sort of a prison paralegal, helping folks out in Michigan and Detroit, and generates a constituency of support, a political and legal constituency where people actually care about his story.
And Andrew, let me stop you right there real quickly, because what you're describing is a situation where Philip Chance was not in hiding. He wasn't on the lam in Michigan. He had very much had a public life.
He had a public life. One of the ironies of the story is the more public his life became in Michigan, the angrier the folks in Alabama got. So to make the longer story short, he is granted asylum by one governor after another in Michigan as sort of a man who shouldn't be forced to go back to Alabama because of that state's notorious injustices, especially racial injustices, in its prison system. So Michigan is protecting Philip Chance. He's leading a productive life. And for 14 years, his drama plays out in federal courts, one after the other, with Alabama fighting to get extradition of him and Michigan resolutely saying, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to keep him here. He's living a productive life. He's not hurting anyone. And it would be an injustice to return him. Finally, Alabama wins. And he gets sent back down to Alabama in 1996. And here again, there's a twist in the story. He's up for parole 3 years later, and he gets parole in Alabama. And at that point, Alabama officials could have said, all right, he's come back for justice. He's served additional time. We're going to allow him to be released. Only they don't. The entire sort of political infrastructure in Alabama fights the parole board decision, and he gets stuck in prison where he remained for the rest of his life until he died in November, a very sick man who, even until the end, wasn't getting the health care that he had asked for in prison.
Is it fair to say, Andrew, that in the end, during all those intervening years of parole and then parole taken away, that there was a sense of get back, maybe, from Alabama? This guy made a fool of us in front of Michigan and in front of everyone else, and he's just never getting out?
Yeah, I think so. I think that there was a sense from Jeff Sessions and William Pryor, who's now an 11th Circuit federal judge, from the governor, that this is somebody who had made the state look bad. This was somebody who could be made an example of, a black man who had run away, a fugitive. And so Alabama wanted to throw the book. But even then, remember, the parole board was so impressed by his behavior in prison, so convinced that he wasn't going to be a danger, that the parole board essentially endorsed the release. And even at that point, essentially the executives came in and changed the makeup of the parole board to make sure that there was no parole ever granted again.
So Philip Chance, Jade, leaves Alabama, gets back to Michigan. This was when you and your sister came into the picture because you were born during that time when he was back in Detroit with your mom.
Yes. My dad probably met my mom about 4 or 5 years after being back. I was born in 1986. By the time I was 10, my father was gone. And that was pretty much the last time I have ever seen him as a free man. I have one major childhood memory that stands out in my mind of just spending quality time with my father as a daughter. I was probably about maybe 8 or 9. And, you know, it was a regular day. It wasn't anything necessarily special. For whatever reason, I can't really remember exactly why, but I wasn't having a great day. But I remember him looking over and asking me, would you like to go get some ice cream? Nothing extravagant or anything, something really simple. He just looked over and said, would you like to go get some ice cream? And I said, of course, you know, of course I'd like to go get some ice cream. And we went to the Dairy Queen, and I'll never forget, he ordered the biggest ice cream sundae with bananas and cherries and syrup and all of the goodies. And we sat there and split a sundae and just talked. And for whatever reason, that memory is like burned in my brain. It's something that I'll never forget because even in its simplicity, it was one of the few times that all of the hustle and bustle stopped, all of the reporting stopped, all of the fighting and acquiring support and fundraising and rallying and all of that just kind of took a halt for a moment. And it was just me and my dad.
Is there justice now that your father is gone and passed away? Is there justice in the legal sense left?
Absolutely not. The last conversation that I had with my father was him calling from prison after sitting in a prison cell for a week and a half, almost 2 weeks, with fluid on his lungs, frustrated because he could not get the medical attention he needed to have someone send him out to the hospital because after being sick for so long, people started treating him with the premise that you're going to die soon anyway, so there's no need for us to spend the money to send you out to the hospital. We'll just let you be. That's not something easy to bear for a daughter in regards to, you know, legal accountability. There has been none shown. I don't know if anybody has ever heard in any case where you're granted the parole and then 24 hours later, the governor removes someone from the parole board, appoints them with the police chief so that then the decision could be in alignment with what they desire, and then rescind and take back a parole in 24 hours. I've never heard of it.
A story of a young life in prison, journeys of 1,000 miles from south to north and back again, of parole and of a black man in the South in the American criminal justice system. Andrew Cohen, commentary editor at the Marshall Project, author of Case in Point. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
And Jade Chance, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.